Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Mark Striegel, John Astronomy, the Talking Metal Podcast, coming to you from the Silver Spacecraft. I'm Bud Friendly, and now your hosts, Mark and John.
Hey guys, welcome to another edition of Talking Metal. I am here with co-host John Astronomy. Welcome back, John.
Thank you, Mark. I am happy to be back on Talking Metal. I am here in Midtown Manhattan.
Yes.
Our favorite place to hang at a bar.
Official stomping ground.
Yes.
Of the origins of Talking Metal.
Now, I have to say one thing. We were supposed to do this podcast at what was called Rockin' Riley's,
right,
which is a place that I first hung out at on the Sunset Strip amongst all the other great places like the Rainbow and the Whiskey and the Viper Room and the Hustler Store, which I think might have gotten torn down to build an apartment complex.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
But anyway,
if so, what a shame.
Unfortunately, was that?
I said, if so, what a shame.
Yeah, I know. It was a shame. Totally. I got a shirt there amongst other things. What has happened is we came here expecting to see Rockin' Riley's and Nils Lozor's photos all over the walls, and unfortunately, it is not Rockin' Riley's anymore.
Right.
It's changed
the name.
It's still
good. I'm having a good time hanging with you and
your
friend.
We're in the Renaissance Hotel in Manhattan, right near Madison Square Garden, and the reason I know about this place is not only Rockin' Riley's, but I know it because this is where Ace stayed he did the NHL Winter Classic.
Right.
And this whole place, this floor, the restaurant downstairs, the lobby, everything was all, this is the lobby, NHL. So everywhere went, it was NHL. And everybody here was from the NHL.
Wow.
Very
cool. Good stuff, John. And so great to be hanging with you, drinking with you tonight. We've had a few beers already. Actually, you haven't been drinking beers. I had two beers, and now I'm on to a mojito. What are you drinking?
I'm drinking something called the Apex, and it is celery-infused gin.
Nice. Wow.
Mixed with apple juice and some miscellaneous other things.
Wow. All right.
Want to do a Talking Metal toast?
Yes, let's do it. Okay. Talking Metal toast, old school.
Talking Metal toast. I'm going to drink the microphone instead of the drink by accident.
Well, I tell you what. We got all the thrash you could want in one episode of Talking Metal.
Awesome.
We were going to break this up to two episodes. Let's do it as one massive, epic episode.
Cool.
I'm gonna throw some names at you right now. Chuck Billy, a testament.
Testament. Chuck Billy. I've met him before at one of these horror conventions.
Did you interview him once for Talking Metal without me?
Not Chuck Billy, but I did interview Greg Christian.
Without me.
Without you.
Right.
Somewhere around here. I think it was at the Hammerstein where they played.
So we've never had Chuck Billy on the podcast because I've never interviewed him.
I don't think we had Chuck Billy. I met Chuck Billy.
I thought you interviewed Chuck Billy one time.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I might have got a photo with Chuck Billy maybe, but I know I've met Chuck Billy.
Okay, so
I met Alex Skolnick. Oh, so Chuck Billy's on.
He's on this episode, and he's talking about vaping. And,
I love Chuck Billy. He's great.
So he is about to join us. We're going to get into that first. Then, John Keevil,
Warbringer. I follow him on Facebook. I loved all his wedding photos. We jam with him twice, right?
Yep.
Yeah, at the Gibson Guitar Showroom.
Once.
Only once.
But we interviewed him. We interviewed him on our TV show.
Correct.
In 2008. Then we jammed with him in 2012 with Dan Lorenzo and Ron Lipnicki.
Where did we do that first interview at? Was that
in
Gibson?
Gibson Showroom.
Okay, so
yeah,
we were
place.
At Gibson with him twice, but we only jammed with him once.
So this interview with him is coincidentally on his first wedding anniversary.
Oh, congratulations,
it took place
guys.
In Montreal, heavy Montreal. So we're going to hear that interview coming up.
You sound like you have the Montreal accent right there.
I think, really?
Yeah. Just because you're up there, you might have heard people say it so many times, it's coming out.
Well, they speak French. I have been told I have a Toronto accent.
Oh, really?
And that might be because my family's from Buffalo.
Oh, right,
So you're, the accent kind of slips over the border.
Correct.
In the Buffalo area. Yep. But spent the first 5 years of my life in Buffalo. So we got Chuck Billy, John Keevil, and it doesn't end there. There's more.
It's insane.
We've got David Sanchez from the thrash metal band Havoc.
Very cool.
And they are great. They put out some great music, so be sure to check them out and stay tuned for the interview. And then ending the interview, a guy who I'm now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm 95% sure you interviewed him solo for Talking Metal in 2005.
Oh.
Because I went back. I actually researched this, and I didn't do the interview. He is back, and he tells me it's been far too long, and he's correct. But his name is Benji of Skindred.
Yes, I interviewed him at the Him concert.
Wow, okay.
At the Hammerstein Ballroom back in the day. That is amazing.
Yeah,
very
2005.
Cool.
2005. I Googled it. It's still up there. It lives.
That is so cool.
Probably lived for hundreds of years on the internet.
On the internet. That interview. Yeah.
So Skindred. Benji's back.
And Benji, thanks for coming back on Talking Metal all these years later. That was one of the very first interviews that we really ever did.
So and as he says at the beginning of the interview, I think I say we last interviewed you, even though it was you. I say we.
Yeah,
in 2005.
We're we.
And he says he's been. Well, that's been far too long, man.
Yes, that's cool. So, that was a great show. You remember that? I went to see him. Skindred opened up. It was at the Hammerstein Ballroom, which is a block and a half away from here.
Right.
Amazing show. Both bands.
Yes. So on that note, let's get right into it. Let's hit some Testament. Let's hit the song Rise Up, and this will be followed by my interview with Chuck Billy of Testament.
The smell of death reeks through the air. The stench of burning bodies, bloodshed everywhere. Scattered remains with bullet shells. Send in the dogs of war, unleash the hounds of hell. It's time to rise up. It's time to rise for war. It's time to rise up. Black is death and red is war.
Hey, it's Mark Striegel of Talking Metal, and what an honor. On the phone, we have Mr. Chuck Billy of Testament. Chuck, how are you?
I'm doing awesome.
Cool. I'm doing good. I got to see you guys way back at the beginning of June in New Jersey, and the tour is still going. It was a great, great night. You guys, Anthrax, Lamb of God, Slayer. How has the tour progressed?
Oh, it was great. I mean, it's like, you know, definitely a historical event.
Yeah.
You know, being with Slayer, and especially for us, we got a lot of history over 30 years with them, and it's an honor to be kind of a part of the farewell tour. And I got to tell you, you know, Slayer, if this is truly their farewell tour, they're doing it right. It's the best they're playing, production, just, you've seen it, you know.
Yes. It's amazing.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. A lot of fire on the stage.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it is a great tour. And how much is left on the tour? I mean, like I said, I saw you like 2 months ago.
We're
at this point.
We're about 10 days in right now, maybe. So we still got a ways, yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right, very cool. And I also wanted to talk to you about your vaping products, because this is something that I guess you ventured into a number of years back, and now you have released some new items, which sound really, really cool. And I mean, just as a business guy, it seems like this is the time to get into this, because the industry is exploding. And, you know, let's start there. What attracted you to going into the vaping business?
Well, I mean, I was approached about doing a product with Lord Vapor pens 4 years ago or so. And you know, I don't think everything was legal quite yet in as many states as it is now.
Right.
But it was something new and something I thought was probably good for people, especially like for medical use, you know, people that probably don't smoke weed or maybe never have. And, you know, like my example is my sister-in-law, she never smoked weed and kind of looked down on it. But when she got it with cancer, her doctor recommended her trying it. And they asked me about bringing them over one of the vaporizers, the Chiefs, and some weed. And I showed her how to use it and do it. And it helped her because she had problems not being able to eat, and it helped her with her appetite. So, you know, there's that benefits. Of course, yeah, there's going to be the people that just use it for smoking, and like myself,
yeah,
you know, I still like smoking a joint. But when it comes to vaping, when I want to go somewhere private, like say the movies or a baseball game or shit, even getting away with it on the plane, you know,
right.
That's when the vapes really come in handy.
right on.
You know, you got a 12-hour flight somewhere, you know, and a hit now and then is not bad.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are, I guess, three new products that you're now launching.
Yes.
So let's go through these individually. Can you fill us in a little bit? The Tomahawk.
Yeah, the Tomahawk is pretty much like a pipe. It's a very convenient device that has five pods that come with it. And you preload the pods with weed. And it's a cone-shaped pipe, basically, and it has a built-in lighter at the end. So, like the other night, we were using it outside after the show, and it was very windy, but it still worked fine. It worked great in the wind. So like, man, I was like selling the product right there to all my friends that's on the tour just because it was working so great in the wind. And that's one I like using. You know, it's pretty convenient. You're looking conspicuous. You ain't holding a lighter to a pipe, you know?
Yeah.
And then the second one I have is it's called the Dream Catcher. And the Dream Catcher is an oil cartridge vaporizer that works great. I mean, it's got three temperatures in it, and it's shaped like a Zippo, basically. And from all the other cartridge vaporizers I've seen, the cartridges where you hit the mouthpiece are always exposed. So you either got to take the cartridge out or, you know, you not put it in your pocket or something. Whereas the new one I have, it has like a Zippo lid, so you can just simply close the lid, put it in your pocket, and it's very inconspicuous, and it looks like a lighter. And it definitely doesn't look like paraphernalia.
Right.
And the battery life on it is awesome. I started it at the beginning of the tour, and I'm still charged up. I think I probably I'm kind of doing a test to see how long it'll go without it dying. But like I said, I'm almost 10 days in. I left on the 26th. It was the first date, and it's still going. So the battery's awesome on it.
Right.
Cool. It comes with like three different adapters, so you can use any cartridge because they're making different size cartridges now, and you can get all the way up to a gram cartridge, which is pretty awesome. That lasts a long time.
Cool.
And they got the cool graphics on them, so they're pretty unique looking. And then the final product is the War Drum, which is basically the second generation vaporizer from, you know, it's just a new and improved. The problems we're having with the first generation was that the mouthpieces were breaking off pretty easily. So we redesigned it to where it's a magnetic top, and it's PAX, which was most of the number one vaporizers. It's similar to that. It has a magnetic top. Also, it has pods. Also, it has an adapter that you can drop in the chamber to vape wax as well. So that's kind of unique.
Right.
And again, the battery life lasts awesome, and they're actually replaceable batteries. So you can get two or three batteries, have them charged, take them with you. You know, you're out on somewhere where you have no power access, and they work awesome. And these are all quality stuff. I mean, it's not novelty stuff. It's actually a really good product. So we're very, very proud of the new line.
Yeah, and I mean, like you said, they have cool designs. You can check them out, guys, online at lordvaporusa.com. There's also, like, T-shirts and, like, coasters and bag tags and all sorts of stuff you can pick up, too.
Yeah, and that's a different line. That's the chief of Thrash, that the line of merchandise we have. And there's everything under the sun that you can get under there. You know, we don't list everything on the site, but you can pretty much get anything you want, you know, from computer pads to cups to, you know, hats, anything. There's a big variety of merchandise available for it.
Right. Now, are these available in stores or just strictly through the website?
Well, right now it's at the website, but for me traveling and meeting people, I do have friends around the country, and they have shops, and they want to hold this. They want it. So we are definitely going to start doing selling them to the shops, you know.
Okay.
I think now we're just trying to get it off the ground, get everybody knowing about it and checking it out and reviewing it and take it from there.
And did you have certain artists that worked with you on the designs that are on there?
Actually Marcelo Vasco, who's he did our last record cover with Elleran Cantor. He helped us out with some of the designs of the shirts and the placement of the artwork on all the products.
Cool. Cool. And I guess on the music front, I wanted to check in with you. I had read that you were tentatively planning to get back into the studio in early 2019. I wanted to see if that was still the game plan and if you guys had started writing anything at this point. Are there riffs?
It,
are there lyrics
is.
Ready to go?
There's no lyrics, but I'm sure Eric's got riffs going, and so does Alex. After the Slayer tour, we're not taking any more tours. It's that time to buckle down and try to get some music written. You know, our hopes and dreams would be, you know, to get in the studio by January and have an album out by the summer.
Oh.
That would be our ultimate dream, but, you know, we'll see what happens. it's tough making promises because you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, of course. And when you do songwriting, you know, with Eric, and you mentioned Alex too, do you guys enter the studio with like completed, finished ideas ready to go, or do you kind of go into the studio and work stuff out there and do actual
Sometimes
writing in
works
the studio?
That way.
Yeah.
Sometimes it works that way. I mean, it all depends how much those guys have worked on it. But, you know, a lot of the times Alex has brought completed demoed songs. So it all depends. I mean, last year Alex didn't contribute as much to the record. But, you know, it's wide open this year, you know.
Cool. And has there been any thought on working with a producer or mixer? I know you had Andy Sneap mix the last one, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's always that thought and talk, but then there's always, at the end of the day, we always go, you know what? I don't see anything wrong with what Andy did. So,
right.
You know, let's continue on. You know, like they say, you don't mess with it if it ain't broke, you know.
So you would definitely bring Andy back to mix again?
I think so. I mean, yeah. I think he's got a good grip on our sound, and we work well together. And you know, at this point, I mean, unless we had issues, there's no reason to try to go somewhere else, you know? So I don't see it yet.
Right. Gotcha. And now you do management work too. You manage Exodus?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not anymore.
We
don't manage Exodus anymore. We're managing Benedict and Soil Work. And right now, the only band I'm managing is Shattered Sun, which is one of our first bands we started managing.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, they're a young band out of Texas. They're on their second record on Victory Records. And, you know, I enjoy working with them. They're hardworking young kids, and I'm really trying to take them from the beginning and kind of, you know, lead them in the right directions business-wise and get them on their feet, you know, doing their own business, you know, eventually as well.
Cool. And do they have music out? Is there an album out by them yet?
Yeah, there's actually two albums out.
Oh, okay. I have to check them out.
Their second record out last July, but we're working on a new record right now, and you know, we'll see where that goes. It's been tough to get them out on the road on some tours, you know. So,
right.
You know, I find it difficult trying to break a new band.
Right on. Yeah. And you guys, of course, as we mentioned at the beginning of the interview, you're out on the road on this Slayer tour, the final Slayer tour. Has there ever been any talk amongst Testament, like, hey, at some point we got to hang it up, we got to do a farewell tour or announce the end? Or is that still just a long way down the road?
That's I hope it's a long way down the road. I mean,
yeah.
I think we've, once, you know, Alex and the original guys came back in 05, once we really kind of buckled down and say, you know, we're going to get back and be a touring band and work hard, you know, we've been kind of forging forward, and it's been great, and our relationships and the music we've been writing and everything has been working. So I don't think that's even been a consideration, you know.
Good.
You know, I would think it'd have to be something catastrophic for us to go, okay, it's time, you know.
Good. Well, that's good to hear. And Chuck, I know you are out on the road right now, so we don't want to take up too much of your time. We do thank you for checking in with us, and we encourage all the Talking Metal listeners to go to LordVaporUSA.com. There's a drop-down menu at the top there. One of the choices is Chuck Billy, so you just click on that, and you can see all these great products that Chuck was telling us about today. Tomahawk, Dreamcatcher, War Drum, some really cool stuff.
Yeah, very cool.
Chuck, thank you so much for talking with us on Talking Metal.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man.
You bet.
Appreciate it.
Keep in touch.
All right, man.
Till the eternity of dodge and fall.
was Into the Pit by Testament from 1988, one of my all-time favorite years.
Yes, what a great year it was. I think we met in late 87, but we definitely hung out a lot in 88
yeah,
at Berklee College of Music.
We had a blast back in those days,
yeah,
Mark.
Yeah, good times.
You want to hear something? I never told you this before. It has nothing to do with metal. Okay. I never knew what a Brussels sprout was until I went to your home.
Was that my mom?
In Pennington.
Yes.
Yeah. And now they're one of my favorite things. I know this is off
when
topic.
When did you come there?
It was around the time we first met. I don't know if I can say this on the air.
Yeah, well, I remember there were two times. You came down. One time we went to an Ace show in Pennsylvania,
okay.
Some random place.
Right.
Another time we went to the opening night of
the
Revenge
Kiss
show.
Yeah,
the Revenge
in Bethlehem,
tour.
PA.
I don't know if it was one of those
it
times.
It might have been one of those nights. Do you remember we went to a facility that we met someone named Jennifer L.
Yeah, oh, I remember that.
Yeah, that was good.
I think that was actually a different time.
Yeah, that was.
So I think you came down numerous times,
yes,
to Pennington. Yeah.
The best story I have. Can I tell one quick story before we get into,
yes,
the podcast?
Sure.
Okay. I hope I don't get anybody in trouble. I'll be a little cryptic with it. There was one point where we walked from a facility called AJ's, all the way back to Hoboken.
Yeah, that was like a
that
4 mile
far.
Walk. And the thing you're leaving out, it was after a whole night of drinking.
Right.
Where we were literally broke. We had no money.
Somehow,
to afford
nowadays we got credit cards. We have all kind of access to money. But back
somehow
in those
the
days,
the credit cards were maxed.
The credit cards were maxed out,
gone.
And the cash was gone. Yeah. And we had to walk from a place called AJ's
in Secaucus.
Secaucus,
I believe,
New
it's
Jersey.
Still there.
It is still there.
Right,
I just checked the other day. Yeah. And they have a rock venue. At least at one point, they had a rock venue that was part of AJ's. It may not exist anymore. AJ's is still going strong. And we walked from AJ's all the way to Hoboken because neither of us had, like,
money,
$10 or anything, you know, for a car.
Wow. Wow.
That was a great walk, and I always think of that.
And it was uphill, too.
Uphill.
Yeah,
we had to go into Jersey
Weehawken.
City Heights.
Yeah.
And
oh,
then
Union.
Down.
That was Union. Yeah. Over into Union. Yeah.
Crazy. We walked so far. It was out of
good
whack.
Times. What a history.
And guess what?
John,
if you guys want to know what we're talking about, you're talking about listeners, you search AJ's and Secaucus, and I think you will understand why we had no money left.
Yes. And who knows? The night is young. Maybe we'll end up at AJ's again
we
tonight.
We could end up at AJ's a little bit later.
Yeah.
You never know.
You never know. It's only,
it's only a
skip and a hop away over the Hudson River. So
correct.
We will see. But anyways, this is John Keevil of the band Warbringer. They are still going strong these many years later. Stronger than ever, actually. It's such good music coming from these guys. I cannot wait to hear the new single. Where is it, John? You told me it would be ready by Heavy Montreal, but it was not ready, so you got some explaining to do, which you will do in this interview right here. Our good friend John Keevil of the excellent band. I know there are a lot of thrash metal bands out there, but to me, Warbringer is the best, if not one of the best. Check them out, guys. Here we go. Mark Striegel and John Keevil in Montreal, Canada. Right here on Talking Metal. Hey, it's Mark, and we are here in Montreal, Canada, catching up once again with John Keevil from Warbringer, who is here to destroy the stage at Heavy Montreal today, Sunday, July 29th. John, how are you?
I'm doing great, man. In high spirits, well-rested. We flew in yesterday. I'm on an anniversary trip with my wife, so we, like, practically left Disneyland on our wedding anniversary 2 days ago.
Your first anniversary? Or?
Yeah,
first. Congratulations,
so we went all out and we're doing a whole trip around. We're going to Vermont after this to go hiking around in the woods.
Nice.
And so this is, like, you know, we just happened to have a heavy metal festival as part of that vacation.
Yeah.
It's really neat. I like that I get to do that shit in my life, you know?
Right. Well, we had like a 40-minute interview with you recently on the podcast.
Two weeks ago or something.
not too long ago. But just a little catch up here in person at Montreal. You'd mentioned a new single is on the way. How's that coming along?
It's done.
Right.
So we're literally awaiting release. There's also going to be a limited edition 7-inch. That's why we're waiting really since not playing it today, like we kind of discussed in the podcast. The label decided to make a 7-inch happen, so we pulled a live track from our last summer tour. We hit up our sound guy, and we got a live version of Descending Blade from Woe to the Vanquished, which that turned out pretty damn good on the B-side of that 7-inch. So that'll come out, but it's mainly going to be a digital single with like a lyric video that goes with it.
Nice.
And just to put out a single, remind people that Warbringer exists and that we will blow your head off anytime you put us in your stereo.
Right on, yeah. Right on. Cool. And how long a set do you get at the at Heavy Montreal? Like 45 minutes?
45. So we're doing 9 songs, and you know we're going to do what we do and gun them out as fast and hard as we can pretty much and just try to essentially be like the live show equivalent of a nuke.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you prefer festivals over, like, say, headlining dates or individual dates, or how do they compare?
It's a totally different experience because, like, the show itself, honestly, I don't remember a show after I play it because I'm just in this weird autopilot where I'm thinking about vocals and performance, and so like my memory totally goes, and I find that very interesting psychologically. It's all the adrenaline and shit. Yeah. So shit, I couldn't tell you. You know, I've played to audiences anywhere from the side of like 30 to 12,000 or something, and I mean, what I actually do in either case is exactly the same. So I enjoy festivals, though, because I like the really social atmosphere during the day, and I like getting to see a lot of other bands. And, of course, just, you know, any band would rather play in front of more people, so I like that. But one of the things about the club shows that's fun is I think the kind of band we are can, like, really just rip the crowd's head off in that kind of setting, because I can, like, jump in, you know, get in people's face, jump in the crowd, and, like, something about that is going to make usually like the hardest like thrash shows but festival crowds is a more like it's a different atmosphere. We even change up the set a bit on festivals to include more like fist in the air type stuff and less of the just straight up Blitzkrieg attack that we normally do.
Right on. Cool. One thing I've been asking everybody is albums, full albums in their entirety. What albums, and they don't even have to be metal, they can be whatever, they can be metal, they don't have to be. What albums, give me two or three that have really been important to you in your life and emotionally affected your life's path?
Okay, now I've done a lot of interviews over the years and I've gotten this question before, but I'm going to give one to somebody who's one of my all-time favorite musicians who just died actually on my wedding anniversary, Mark the Shark Shelton of U.S. cult epic heavy metalers Manila Road.
Oh, yeah.
And I love that, and I'll say Christologic, though I actually think Open the Gates and the Deluge might, and Mystification I might think are a little better records, but Christologic's just the one that is a real like feel good record.
Right.
You know, just songs about ancient, kind of like a mishmash of all mythology done with that voice, and it makes me so happy to hear. I just love it.
Here's a weird question. The first time I ever interviewed you in person in New York, did you have a Christologic t-shirt
on? I did. I don't have the shirt anymore, I'm not just not jumping on because the dude.
I remember that specifically. You had that t-shirt.
I really like anything that's like wizardly or reminds me of like ancient magical times before this weird kind of soulless technological era we're in. So anything that evokes that I find really wonderful. I'll send out my tribute to that guy because that's one of my favorite musicians.
Were they on Shrapnel? I'm trying to remember.
They were
label.
For a minute.
I think they did some work with Mike Varney on Shrapnel.
They did the track Flaming Metal Systems, which is now a bonus track on Christologic. Yeah. And that starts with like a minute long guitar solo because it was on a Shrapnel Records compilation.
Yeah, you know what it was on? It was on one of the, it was like the U.S. Guitar Hero Shrapnel compilation. Either volume, I want to say it was volume 2, but I'm not sure.
Well, you know your Shrapnel Records better than
that. Yeah, well, that was my hate. I mean, I'm 48 years old, so that was my heyday when I was a kid. I was really into Shrapnel Records.
Hell yeah, dude.
Yeah.
One of the better record. Like, they had a couple of the better record label names. Shrapnel Records, Combat Records, and I got to hand it to our label, Napalm Records.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, just going with like some military jargon, you know, some kind of weapon plus records is a good metal label.
Yeah, they've been getting a lot of press lately with this Dee Snider release.
That's sweet. Yeah.
Cool. Give me another one or two albums.
Okay, here's one that's pretty underknown too. You ever heard of Ashbury Endless Skies?
No.
Okay, that's like it's from like the early '80s. It's a really my wife loves it, and we were just listening to it, but it's like it's kind of unique because it's like the midpoint between really early heavy metal and like, you know, and like 60s, 70s rock, like reminds me of like the Eagles or James Taylor at parts. So it's like soft, and but the guitar, the melodic lead guitar playing is just a 10 out of 10. Every song. Song's good. It's a really fantastic record. It's not like there's only like one song that it has a real like head banging riff in it.
Wow.
But it's got the like wizardly metal themes and stuff.
Cool.
It's really good.
Check that out.
And then my classic answer for this question is Bathory, Twilight of the Gods. If you want
to
say like
okay.
that, which record is like my spirit? And so that one just sounds like the song of the mountain to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. And we always look forward to what Warbringer has in store. The single it sounds like is on the way. And
it's called Power Unsurpassed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so this probably won't get released till around the time that does, or if a few days before. So fuck it, I don't care. It's called Power Unsurpassed, and I'll tell you a bit about the song.
Okay, yeah, please.
It's a mid. I promised we'd play it, and then we didn't. So I gotta do something for you.
Yeah.
So anyway, Power Unsurpassed is like a mid-paced song. It was written by Carlos and myself. Kind of in the vein of like living in the world, a whirlwind, or remain violent. The theme is kind of cool because I pretty much just got the chorus line because of that one Donald Trump quote, the "we will rain down a fire and a fury like the world has never seen before." Now, like, I study warfare, as we talked about before. So, like, you know, I get the impression that he doesn't know exactly what he's saying when he says that.
Okay.
And that's really scary.
Yeah.
You know, that's really scary. We have and I'm just like, what a world we live in where the president, the leader of the free world, is going to give, like, a thrash singer who wants to write the most evil shit he can think of, like me, a line, and I can just quote it verbatim. You know, I don't have to change it.
Yeah.
So the song is kind of about, though, it's not about him. It's about that kind of idea that you're going to be number one at all costs, and I will have all the power, or I'll watch it all burn.
Right.
That kind of mentality. So it's not just about him, but it's about anybody who's got that mindset, you know, the line at the end is I will be second to none over and over, but like really kind of demented and megalomaniac sounding. So I was trying to do that. And there's a little bit of nod to the chorus lines, like the old age has died, a new world has begun with a fire and a fury, second to none.
Nice.
And so that's
nice.
There's a little bit of an allusion to not just weapons of mass destruction, but Warbringer and its weapons of thrash destruction, because I don't think any of the old guys are putting out a record as vicious as Woe to the Vanquished right now. I'll just say it.
Yeah,
Woe to the Vanquished
from 2017, the great Warbringer record, and we will definitely play some music off of Woe to the Vanquished in just a bit here on the podcast. John, before I let you go, you've had a long history with Talking Metal. I remember we had you on. Oh, God, it had to be back in 2008 when you guys were just getting going. I believe that's when you had the Crystal Logic T-shirt on. You were on our TV show doing a brief interview. Then you came back a number of years later and jammed with us.
Yeah, that was
sweet.
We
did the...
Bell Tolls.
And that was with Ron Lipnicki, who was in Overkill. He's currently left Overkill, but great drummer. And that's up on YouTube, guys. You can check that out. I'll put it in the show notes today on TalkingMetal.com. Yeah, so just, thank you for always being so cool with us.
Thanks for always having me on the show. My pleasure.
Yeah, you're welcome back anytime.
Yeah,
have a great
care set
today.
I always feel like, man, some of the stuff, like on interview, I'm always trying to be friendly and stuff, and then I'm like, we're going to nuke Montreal, you know? It's funny. We'll be right back.
Descending Blade by Warbringer, featuring John Keeble. John, thanks for joining us. Thanks for the update. Thanks for being a part of the Talking Metal family for so long. And we are hanging in Midtown Manhattan with John on this epic episode of Talking Metal. John, I'm going to hit one more interview from the Heavy Montreal Festival, which is so great, man. I hope you can get up there one day, one year with me.
I have a feeling that next year I will be up there.
They drive me around on golf carts.
That's insane.
They feed us, put us up in a hotel room. It's so great. Flew me up there. So much fun. And I got so many great interviews, including this one with David Sanchez of the great thrash metal band Havoc. They put on a blistering set at Heavy Montreal. This is Hang 'Em High, followed by my interview with David Sanchez of Havoc.
We'll be right back.
We are here with David Sanchez of Havoc at Heavy Montreal 2018. You guys are playing later today. Have you played Heavy Montreal, David, before?
Yeah, we played like 4 or 5 years ago.
Did you? Cool.
Yeah, it was killer.
Cool. Was that the Metallica year? Or I'm trying to.
Before that.
Before that. Cool. Cool. And do you guys prefer festivals or headlining shows? Like, how do you, two different beasts?
Festivals are cool. There's a lot of people.
Yeah.
And it's like party atmosphere. But I like playing smaller shows where I can like headbang sweat onto people.
Yeah.
Those are more fun.
Right on.
In my opinion. I like being up close.
Cool. And you're currently out with Jungle Rot and Extinction AD. How's the tour going?
It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. We Jungle Rot just met up with us a few shows ago. Extinction's been out with us the whole time.
Yeah,
we had four shows in Canada with Suicidal Tendencies.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, runs great.
Cool. And your last record is about a year and a half old right now. Little time has passed since it came out. How's it still feeling to you? How are you living with it at this point?
It's cool. Yeah. We're all pretty happy with how it turned out.
Conformicide, we're talking
about. Yeah, Conformicide. And all of us feel like it's our best record, and crowd and fans seem to really dig it. So
yeah,
it's fun to play that stuff live, and we'll play a bunch of it today. And we're getting ready to write another one soon.
Oh, cool. Cool. So writing hasn't begun yet?
Not really. We got some riffs in the stockpile.
Right.
But
right. Cool.
Nothing fleshed out yet.
Cool. And it's been almost 10 years. I think next year will be 10 years since your first full-length, Burn, came out. And you've been doing this band for about 14 years now.
Yeah.
What are some of the biggest lessons you've learned since starting this band?
Keep expectations low and never be disappointed. But that's not with this band. That's just with life in general.
Right. Yeah. It seems like a good philosophy.
Yeah, expectation is the root of heartache.
Yeah.
And I think it's not necessary, but I think it's a good idea if you're going to start a band and go on tour to have a guy that is a mechanic in your band.
Yeah. Fix the van and fix
Yeah.
A lot of breakdowns over the years.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. They're machines. They break down, especially with, you know, how hard we run them.
Right.
We're on tour very frequently, and we definitely beat them up when we go out.
Right on. So you have some riffs. You're going to be doing some songwriting. What direction do you think you'll be heading musically with the next release?
With every record, the boundaries keep getting like broader, and we keep stretching the box out, and I think the next one will do that more. It'll still be heavy and groovy and cool and fast, but there'll be some probably weird shit on there too that'll throw a curveball to people.
Right on. And are you thinking 2019 release?
Hoping so, yeah.
Yeah, cool. And label-wise, do you have a label?
Yeah, Century Media.
Century Media.
This will be our second record with them.
Cool, cool. And one thing that's been going on social media a lot, I don't know if you're on Facebook, I see all these people posting like 10 albums that meant a lot to them in their life for whatever reason. For you personally, could you give me like 2 or 3 albums? They don't even have to, they can be metal, they can be outside of metal, just 2 or 3 musical albums. They don't necessarily have to be the best albums, but they're albums that meant a lot to you.
I think Mr. Bungle's first record,
Mr.
Bungle.
Yeah.
That is a huge, huge inspiration to me. Every time I listen to it, I hear new things that I didn't catch before.
Right.
And there's just so much fucking work that went into making that record.
Yeah.
Like, aside from the music being super interesting and just really innovative. I mean, they'll throw like 8 different genres of music in one song.
Right. Yep.
Aside from the music being genius, I think it's really cool that they added so many like samples and like effects and weird shit after the music was recorded to make the record just like a complete mindfuck when you listen to it start to finish. It's one of my favorite things ever recorded.
Cool.
That would be one of them. Also, let's see. That's another like top favorite. That's tough. There's so many good ones, but I think probably Rain and Blood.
Okay.
Slayer, for the obvious reasons, is intense, and the speed and aggression is off the charts. If I had to pick a third one, I'd say Frank Zappa, You Are What You Is.
Oh, wow. That's an interesting one. It was Steve Vai's on that, right? I believe.
Steve Vai's on it. Yeah. You Are What You Is really cool because from start to finish, the whole record, there's no like lulls, pauses in between songs. Every song kind of like seamlessly goes into the next song.
Right.
Which is really cool. Start to finish, it's like one piece of music.
Even for like the Zappa fan base, it's a interesting pick. Charlena on that record? Charlena, right?
Charlena is on Them or Us.
Oh, okay. All right.
But there's some good tracks on that one too. and then probably like Oingo Boingo, Only
really?
A Lad, their first full-length album is very inspiring to me because Danny Elfman writes some really fucked up, weird, cool music.
Yes.
It's very interesting and musically dense.
Right.
But at the same time, he's writing stuff that's super, super catchy.
Right.
You know? Even though that's super weird music that's very chromatic and like atonal often, somehow it's still fucking catchy and it's all hooks.
Right.
The intro's, you know, easy to get stuck in your head. Then the verse has got a hook. Then the pre-chorus has a hook. Then the chorus has a hook. And the middle has a hook.
Right.
I think the songwriting, the caliber of songwriting is really high, even if it's not appreciated by the masses. I think it's right up there with, like, you know, Lennon, McCartney stuff.
And wow, very cool. And before we let you go, when you're not doing music and you're not in the studio or out in the road touring, what do you do to keep yourself busy? Do you have hobbies? Do you have other interests outside of music?
When we're not on the road?
Yeah.
I like to go hiking.
Hiking?
Yeah, cool. I like taking road trips and going camping, hanging out with my dogs.
Cool. What kind of dogs do you have?
I've got a pit, a boxer mix, and a bulldog mix.
Excellent.
Yeah, they're all cool. Like hiking, reading, making art.
What kind of art do you do?
I just like doodling, drawing.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, it's fun.
Cool.
I like watching documentaries.
You see any good ones lately?
Lately, I watched this really interesting series on Netflix called Wild, Wild Country.
Ah, okay.
About this cult in Oregon that almost took like the whole state over.
Right, right.
People were like poisoning the water supply and trying to, you know, push the original residents out.
Wow.
It's really crazy.
Fucked up. Cool. Well, have a great set today at Heavy Montreal, and thank you so much for spending some time with us here on Talking Metal.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Thanks,
thank you.
David.
Lies to the people, those who speak, see no evil.
Was The Root of Evil by Havoc off the Burn record that came out in 2009. And yes, I still call them records.
Yeah.
Even if they're not on physical records.
Yeah, I do too, definitely. And let's just jump right into this last interview. Skindred is a little bit, I don't know, it may be the oddball in this episode since we've kind of been doing that aggressive thrash metal music. Skindred is definitely a different style. I think they're great. I think their new record, Big Tings, was awesome. It's worth checking out if you like catchy, aggressive rock, pop element here. A lot of different influences thrown in there. They are a great, great band. And definitely check out their new record, Big Tings. And anyways, John, again, you interviewed this guy back in 2005. Here we are in 2018.
Yeah.
The same two guys doing the same podcast, talking metal.
I can't believe it's 2018 and we started in 2005.
It's ridiculous.
How crazy is that?
It really is.
I thought we were doing this for 10 years. We're doing this for like now, what's that, 13 years?
13 years,
2000,
yeah.
But see, it just seems so weird. 2005, I can understand that I've been living in 2005. 2018 sounds like I'm in like
we're
Mars
in the
or something,
yeah.
You know? Like,
yeah, welcome to the future, man.
Yeah, you remember when did I tell you about that before, the future? When I went to this building called The Future on like 30th and Lexington Avenue.
Yeah.
I walked into the
apartment
place,
building,
apartment
right?
building, and yeah. and the welcome. Guy goes, "Welcome to the future."
Right. Yeah, I remember
and,
that.
And of course, I didn't buy because it, back
yeah,
then.
Yeah, they were trying to sell you an apartment.
Yeah, they were trying to sell me an apartment. And with today's standards, if it was that price, I would buy it to right this second. But back then, that was a total... You know, lots of money for me that I did not have at that point in 1993 or whatever it was when I went to the future. Yeah. But the building still exists. Yeah. And yeah. I can't
the future.
Believe it's
you can still rent an apartment.
You can
there.
Still yeah. rent an apartment in the future.
Probably not as nice as it was in 19.
No longer
whatever.
That nice.
Yeah. yeah.
It's no longer the future. You know what the future
it's
is?
The past. That, they've renamed
it's the past.
It the past.
The building is called the past. That's, they got a Trader Joe's under there. So I don't know. You know what the future is now? That
what?
Crazy rectangular building up in the 50s in the east side.
No, it, I don't
it's
know.
A tall rectangle. It's a complete perfect rectangle from bottom to top. And J-Lo and A-Rod, are they together?
Probably.
I
yeah.
think they're in the penthouse.
Why not? Yeah.
Like, I think they're
be.
Up top.
Yeah.
So if you want to meet them, you just go there. And hang out. Now, I was looking online on Instagram, which I'm not an expert on. These pictures came up, and I thought it said something like 3. I thought it said 3,000. I was like, oh, I can afford that per month. No, it was 3 million.
Oh, 3 million
for like a
month.
Studio apartment. Yeah, or 3 million
oh, to buy,
buy or right. something like that. So, unfortunately, I'm not moving into the building with J-Lo and A-Rod. However, for like about an hour, I thought I was moving in there.
Right. Right.
Negative.
All right.
Not true.
Yeah. Once Talking Metal breaks through to the yeah. mainstream,
I might
the money
move in
starts
there. That's my goal. Yeah. That's my goal.
Yeah. Anyways, this is That's My Jam. There's a great music video to this by Skindred. And then we will talk with Benji of Skindred.
You're a freak for the rhythm, slave to the dance. And now I got you in the palm of my hand. Get all dramatic, erratic. Your moves are automatic. You're a freak for the rhythm, slave to the dance. That's my jam.
'cause you're a freak for the rhythm, slave to the dance. And now I've got you in the palm of my hand. Get all dramatic, erratic. Your moves are automatic. You're a freak for the rhythm, slave to the dance. 'Cause you're a freak for the rhythm, slave to the dance. And now I've got you in the palm of my hand.
How you doing?
Yeah, man, just enjoying it. We got a little sunshine in England, so I'm happy.
Oh, that's good. Glad to hear that. It's been a while, man. We had you on the show back in 2005. I was just going
That's too long ago, mate. That's too long ago.
Yeah. So I'm glad we're reconnecting here in 2018, which is an exciting time for Skindred, or at least Skindred fans. I mean, I'm really, really digging the new record, Big Tings. It's out now, came out in April. And let's just start off with the video for That's My Jam. How clever and how awesome is this video? I just love it. I mean, total concept behind it. It's not just a band on a soundstage, which is kind of boring, you know. Well, let's talk about the video.
Well, we got sick of the same thing. Like, we just thought, like, doing the whole band playing the song, blah, 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 and, you know, involving loads of people and all that crap. We just decided, well, the drummer, basically, Aria, he had the idea to do the video of this cat, because we had a cat on the album cover, which we thought was really cool, you know, with the shades and stuff. And basically, it was all Aria's idea. He found the guy who shot the video for him. And we just wanted to do something different, something that, you know, you never had to be in. So we was happy with that, definitely.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just it's a clever video. It's a great story that's going on there. And then the song is just epic. And there are so many great songs on the new record, Big Tings. And, you know, I'm not a Skindred expert, so correct me if I'm wrong, but it does feel like you guys have gone in a slightly different musical direction with this than you had on some of the previous records. Do you agree with that?
I totally agree with it. I also think that what with Big Tings is normally in a Skindred situation of writing an album, a lot of the pressure lyrically and melodies and stuff like that is put on me. But the guys are coming into it, you know, they're not children. I mean, I'm older than the guys in the band, and they've just had a lot of ideas over the years that I've said, oh, well, let's do that another time. Well, it came to the time where we were going to do something that the guys have been doing. Mikey came with the idea for That's My Jam, and we played it to the producer. We wrote about 20 songs and just said to the producer, you pick the songs. And I guess he just dug what, That's My Jam, Big Tings, you know. And yeah, it was a good vibe.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's like I could almost see like a different audience base, too, getting into the music. I mean, at times, you know, I hear like the Faith No More stuff that Faith No More fan might like. But also, like, I could see like Queens of the Stone Age fans or even Foo Fighter fans digging what you're doing here.
Yeah, we've always been fans of that kind of stuff. And I think it's really cool that we can actually just experiment and enjoy that kind of sound as well. You know, we're big fans of rock music, full stop, you know, from AC/DC to the Foo Fighters, as mentioned, you know what I mean? And all the way through, you know, I think without bands like that, we couldn't have wrote the record that we just wrote.
Absolutely. And again, the album that we're talking about is Big Tings by Skindred. We are talking with Benji Webb. And you guys, you've been doing a lot of festivals, it seems like, this summer. We've
been so blessed to play so many festivals in Europe. I think, you know, radio shows in the States are very different from festivals in Europe, you know. As much as, you know, they're great, but I just feel like in Europe, it's just a little more crazy, you know. I mean, like, the other night we played with, check this, Bill. We played with Nine Inch Nails, Hollywood Undead,
nice,
and Limp Bizkit, and that was a hell of a show, you know.
That's awesome.
It was, and what the Nine Inch Nails was just an experience, because the lighting show and sonically they were unbelievable. So, you know, we're very lucky. We get to see some great live acts.
And do you tailor your set list to the festival?
Compromise. We never compromise. That's the worst thing any band can do, you know. Because you know what? If you go out there and compromise, people are not seeing the true you. You know, so we always try to make our set a set that we enjoy. Henceforth, if a crowd digs it, then we went there and we won them over. We've won them over in what we do, not what we're not compromising. You know,
right?
So that's something we never do. We never do that. I don't think any band should do that. I think it'd be crazy to do that.
Right on, right on. Now, honest, you know, Skindred's been out there really going on 2 decades at this point. I think, what, 18 years,
bro.
Yeah.
Years,
yeah.
Man. When you look, what the beautiful thing about Skindred, 18 years with the same lineup.
That is
amazing. That's pretty, you know, I mean, none of us, we're not prisoners to Skindred. You know, we can do what we want. So I'm just showing you how much we love what we're doing and how real we are within that. Having the same lineup for all them years. I mean, I'm older than the guys in the band, and they've been doing it since they were in their early 20s. You know, and now they're touching in their late 30s. You know, right. So it's been a blessing, for sure, to have the same guys. I've seen them go from young men to men with houses and children of their own. You know, so it's really cool.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And when you look back at the 18-year career, I know you've done stuff before Skindred and alongside of Skindred, but specifically with Skindred, that 18-year career, what are some of the highlights that jump out of that time with Skindred? Well,
getting dropped by record companies is very cool. I tell you, because, you know, with a lot of people, they think because they got a record company gets involved and then the record company goes, oh, we don't want you no more. For us, it's always a challenge to know that we keep on going. I think we've released, I think it's like 7 albums and we've had 6 different record companies. And it doesn't matter about the record companies. I think if a band is strong and tight within themselves and within the spirit of the band, I think that's what's, basically, that's been a highlight for us, because every time that adversary comes against us, we unite stronger and move forward. I mean, we've played, like, you know, big shows. I mean, I got asked to sing with Korn once and all that. But I think the most impressive thing for me is how we've gone through the battles with labels and come out the other side and then continued with another label to make a record. I think that's a lot of bands out there, they get disheartened when they lose a record label. I think that's just the beginning. It's an opportunity. Like I said, I think it's the Chinese, they say, crisis. Crisis is another word for opportunity, you know?
Right on. Definitely. Definitely. And again, you always have so much musical stuff going on. I know Dub War is another thing you do. You guys had a single out back in 2016. Is there any new material?
Yeah, we're writing new material. I'd like to put out a new album from Dub War, because, like, I think it was, what, Dub War finished in 97. We're still very close friends. I mean, the guys in Dub War actually live in my hometown, so I see them all the time. We write a lot of stuff together, even outside of Dub War. We're always in connections. We're always in contact with each other. So I believe that we're going to get in the studio. I think we've written about 10 songs.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're going to finish it. We're going to get a new, I think it's going to be called The Declaration of Dub War.
Wow, cool.
And yeah, man.
So you're doing a lot of European stuff with Skindred this summer. Yeah.
But we're itching to get to the States, bro.
Okay, that was my question. Yeah.
Yeah, we're itching. I mean, people got to understand that people just think we put a map, we put a pin in a map and say, let's go, guys. It ain't like that. You know, it takes a lot. You know, I mean, you need to sort out a tour. You need to sort out, you know, how you're going to get to the shows. And then also you got to pay for your visas to work and stuff. So people who think that we're just staying in Europe because we want to be here, you know, when the right time comes and the right promoter comes along, we're going to be in the States doing what we do best.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, we'd love to get you some of the festivals over here. We got Heavy Montreal. You guys would fit in great there. That's a festival up in Canada that they do each year.
Yeah, I do enjoy Canada too. Yeah, man.
Yeah, cool. Well, Benji, it's great catching up with you again, and I hope the whatever it's been 14 years don't go by before we do another interview. Let's stay in touch.
I got a feeling that we're going to be back on the U.S. soil before you know it. I really have.
Awesome. And best of luck to you, and we will we will promote the record here on Talking Metal. Again, it is Big Tings by Skindred. Guys, definitely go check it out. We'll have the links up in today's show notes. Thank you, Benji.
Thank you, sir. Hope to see you again soon, man.
Yeah, take care, man. Bye.
Take care. Bye.
Big Tings running through my mind. I think about them all the time. I'm going to do my thing the way I want to do it, and everything will be all right. Big Tings burning up my soul. I think about to lose control. Do I tell myself that I can get through it? Maybe I'll never know. Big things are in my brain. Big things got me again. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Some things are bigger than me. I can't trust myself.
Title track from the new album by Skindred featuring my good friend Benji, who I interviewed back in 2005.
Your good friend.
I'm kidding. Benji, I consider, if you're on Talking Metal, you're always my good friend.
So many,
even though we haven't seen each other since 2005, but
so many
in my book, you're
man.
My good friend.
So many interviews, and we haven't rehearsed this at all or spoken about this, but John and I, at least verbally, have kind of agreed that he's going to be coming a little bit more back in the fold of the
Correct.
Podcast. There, you've been, for the last probably year and a half, 2 years, you've been making a lot of appearances. There was that weird 14-month period
That's
where
insane.
You were missing completely.
I cannot believe that.
And you know, the podcast has gone up and down. And tentatively, I haven't even spoken with you about this beforehand, but I Emily has become a part of the podcast.
Correct.
And the listeners, you guys seem to really embrace her, which is awesome.
She's great.
And And the thing that I said to her, and she wholeheartedly agreed, was two things that we want to really happen with the podcast. For a while, I stopped having any guests. Then we started bringing guests back. But it seems for the most part, with a few exceptions, I focused more on the classic 80s kind of era guys. And when this show started, we did all those guys, but we also did younger melodic death metal from Sweden.
Right.
We did, you know, Dark Tranquility and all this, mm-hmm. Arch Enemy and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very, I felt we were much more diverse musically back in those days. So with Heavy Montreal, it was great because I interviewed more diverse musical bands up there that we're going to be hearing from. So moving forward, the tentative plan is more diversity and more astronomy.
I like it.
More astronomy.
I like it. More diversity and more astronomy. Very good.
So I think we really, you know, it's good to shake things up every now and again. And I kind of feel like the tentative plan, depending on your availability, is we're going for full circle.
Correct. We're going back to the old days. You're going to hear a lot more stuff, my prediction, from Mark
drinking.
And I out, yeah, out at bars, a lot more. To quote an old tape, a lot of drinking, a lot of music, a lot of jamming.
Right.
You know what I'm talking about?
That's
Jim Hennigan.
Yeah, Jim Hennigan.
A lot of jamming. I got my Jack. We're not sure if he meant Jack Daniels or the Jack for the guitar, but he's got a Tascam, mixes out the ass. He's got a lot of stuff. Remember that quote? I got a DX7. I got a MK3. I got this. Yeah,
basically, mixes Jim Hennigan was this guy who played in a band called Chrome Locust with Todd Youth, who once played with Ace.
Yeah.
And Jim did a prank call tape back in the day. In the Aquarian and the Village Voice, and I'm sure in the Midwest, the Illinois Entertainer, people used to put in ads like saying, looking for a guitarist, no posers, you know, must have good gear and awesome chops, or looking for a guitarist into Cinderella, White Lion, and Slaughter, must have the look, but
and
also
chops.
Must have the chops.
Yeah.
You know,
and the greatest thing is Jim goes. He called one ad.
So he called these ads, and he prank called the ads, and he record them, and he released them kind of as a Jerky Boys tape type of thing.
The best one is when he caught up
hilarious.
And he was reading the requirements. He goes, "Okay, look, I'm 5'10". It says between 5'7" and 5'11", and he goes, "I got the height." He goes, between like 25 and 30." He goes, "I'm 27. I got the age and." He's like, he must have long hair. He goes, I'm not a mercenary. So that was a term back in the day.
Right.
Mercenary.
Yeah, must
like,
not be a mercenary.
Yeah, he's like, I'm
not
a mercenary.
Mercenaries in the musician wanted ads.
Right.
Mercenaries meant you wanted to be paid.
Right.
So if you're a mercenary.
I didn't even know what that meant.
It would mean like, okay, yeah, I'll be in your band if you pay me to come to rehearsal and pay me for the gigs, you know.
Yeah, and then he goes, and I got the looks and I got the chops. And the greatest thing in the whole thing is after he talked to this one guy, may have been from the classic group of New York City, Ripcord. If Ripcord guys are listening to this, look, I personally think Ripcord is probably a cool band. But if you're on Contact Talking Metal, we'll get Ripcord on Talking Metal. That'll be a huge score for us. Anyway. What happened was
I know what you're talking about.
So the guy goes
that Jim prank called. Yeah.
Yeah, he goes, the guy's like, well, do you have do you have long hair? And after like 30 minutes of talking about how great he was, he goes, well, you know, the straggles in the back are pretty long, but you know, it's bald up top. That's my favorite quote of that whole thing.
And for people who don't understand, back in the day, hair was so
a
important.
Big deal.
If you were the least bit receding thinning, no go. You're not in the band. I mean, there's that story about some of the original Cinderella guys who had thinning hair, and they were booted out of the band by the label because they wanted people with thicker hair. And maybe that's why they reappeared in Britney Fox with massive systems.
Systems. That's my favorite word, system.
Yeah. And I don't know if you know if that story is true, so don't quote me.
We're
going
to look it up.
That was once.
You know who I like? Dizzy Dean Davidson.
Yeah. Speaking of systems.
So you know who I...
Wait, was that the singer or the guitar player?
Singer of...
Okay, I don't know if he had
I think
a system,
Billy Childs was the guitarist.
He was the guy with the kind of suspicious-looking hair.
Correct.
Yeah.
Now, you know who I spoke with the other day? Eric Brittingham.
Oh, wow, cool.
Yeah, bass player with Bret Michaels. Yeah, he's really cool. And your buddy Pete. Pete Evick,
yeah.
Yeah, he's so cool.
I haven't heard from him in a while.
Pete is so cool.
He was a good friend of our buddy who died, AJ, aka CC Banana.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Pete Evick, great guy.
Yeah, yeah, Pete was great, and Eric Brittingham is really nice, and they're, of course, playing with Bret Michaels. We just did meaning the Ace Frehley entourage.
John is Ace's tour manager, personal assistant,
right,
aka sometime manager, right?
Correct. Yep. And, yeah, so we had a blast. I got to go into Bret Michaels' room, took a really cool shot of Ace and Bret that I posted on my Facebook and on Ace's. Lita Ford was there. I've been.
I saw a picture you posted of Ace and Lita. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've been becoming closer friends with Lita Ford, which has been great. Which I think is really cool. I know Lita, some of her friends, and some of the guys in her band.
Talking Metal, I think 3 times. I'm not sure. Maybe
have Lita
two
on.
Or 3 times we've had her on.
Yeah,
we
she's
need her back.
Really cool. Yeah. I will definitely get her back. And so I had a blast in July hanging out with those guys, hung out with the guys on Autograph, who we originally met at M3. Simon, Steve, Randy, everybody has been very, very cool.
Yeah,
they're all cool. If I'm missing anybody,
and
forgive
I will
me.
End it with, you know, we're going to wrap things up. I will end it with this. Lita Ford, when I interviewed her in person in New Jersey at a festival, which will go unnamed, we were backstage, and I said to her, Lita, last time I saw you play live was Heavy Montreal, which I guess was probably Heavy Montreal 2015, I'm thinking. And she said, now those people know how to run a festival. Heavy Montreal, class
wow.
act, all the way. She was like, this place, a shit show.
Wow.
That's what she said to me before the interview. Yeah.
You know, for all of the listeners, these festivals are really major undertakings, and you really need... you need to have a staff. I would recommend, if I was putting on a festival, to have like 2 or 3 people devoted to every act. But like the back of Heavy Montreal, there's about 100 bands listed there.
Right.
You can't have like 400 people working for your festival. Like
they somehow managed to do it. And I mean, they like I one point at the end of Saturday night, I got a little drunk and I thought I lost my wallet.
Mm-hmm.
It's a kind of a long story, but. I emailed them in a drunken stupor. I was like, I lost my wallet. And they put out like an all points bulletin.
Wow.
They had people running around the island searching for Mark Striegel's wallet.
Man.
And it turns out it had just fallen behind the desk in the hotel room. And once I sobered up a little bit, I actually realized that.
Oh, no.
I emailed them back and they like called off the search. But
wow.
that showed me
how pro they are.
They are totally on it. And some idiot podcaster from New Jersey loses his wallet, and they're like, sound the alarms.
Yeah,
it was amazing.
Good for them, and what a great festival that is. I had such a blast at the festival I was last at. Kadot, and then we were at a festival in Walker, Minnesota. And
Kadot? Where is that?
Kadot's in Wisconsin.
Wisconsin, okay.
Yeah, and a guy named Craig helped me out in Walker. It was a great festival. And you know, his whole family chipped in. His daughter drove us. He drove us. It was great. We had a blast in both of those festivals.
Awesome.
Festivals are fun.
Yeah, I love festivals. And hopefully we can, you know, get you doing some stuff with us at M3 next year.
Yeah, M3.
Maybe Heavy Montreal. Who knows?
Yeah, and I'd love to go to Heavy Montreal. I'd love to go to Canada.
Yeah, no, it's fun up there. Definitely cool, John.
Montréal, as they say in the French. Do they call it Montréal up there?
Oh, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, that's
one thing I will say. Montréal,
the French pronunciation.
I thought was a little dicky. Was when Fred Durst. Well, I hadn't seen Limp Bizkit since 1996. I know everyone's like, oh, my God, he likes Limp Bizkit. No,
I like Limp Bizkit.
I like their second album, mm-hmm. The Significant Other. But Fred Durst, and they did deliver. I mean, the place
I
went
bet
fucking
they're great.
Crazy
yeah,
for
I bet
them
they're
live.
Good.
And even I felt myself going, oh,
like,
I remember
yeah.
this.
You I know, like it.
But he Get said at one point, the- he was like, Montreal, he's like, what the fuck's up with you people? He's like, is it French or is it English? He's like, pick one, motherfuckers.
Oh,
which,
brother.
Because,
yeah.
And I will say this. That it's interesting because I remember when I was a kid, I'd go to Montreal. If you didn't know French, you were fucked.
Wow.
But now everyone knows English.
Wow.
I mean,
yeah, I didn't know that.
I hate to reveal secrets, but Mitch LaFon, our good friend, he's
right.
a
teacher?
He teaches English. Wow. So thanks to Mitch LaFon, he's got the whole
fucking
city. He
taught the whole Canada how to speak English.
Yeah.
Good for Mitch. Yeah. And I won an award in ninth grade as best French speaker.
Oh, did you? Well, cool.
I only know how to say one thing. Je joue de la batterie. It means I play the drums.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Je m'appelle Jean.
Je joue au guitar.
Yeah, you're au guitar could be it.
Je joue le guitar?
I don't know that. Yeah. I know.
Je joue au volleyball. That means
what's that mean?
I play volleyball, which I don't. But
I know bibliothèque means library, and WC means water closet.
What merci? Everyone say, "Oh,
thank
merci.
You."
Yeah, merci. Okay. I kept saying that. When
merci
would
beaucoup.
I'd be merci.
Merci.
Yeah. So
I like in Russian, it's spicy bow or something like that. I don't know.
I will say when you get underground on the metro subway, they have there, everything is in French. I got really confused.
Oh,
and
really?
Got lost a couple times, but yeah.
I want to go to Montreal.
Yeah, Montreal. Fun stuff. John, it's been great hanging with you here in Midtown Manhattan. Talking Metal, checking out. Do we want to play one more song to take us out, or are
yes,
we,
let's
are we
play
done?
One more song. I always like to end with a song.
Well, I'm going to let you pick it because I don't have.
Okay, can I pick it from any song,
any
or does
genre,
it have to fit the genre of this episode?
No, anything.
Any song. Okay.
Maybe Arthur's.
Since we were talking about what's that?
Arthur's theme song by Christopher Cross.
Oh,
no, just
Christopher Cross, I like that. I was thinking maybe a song by Huey Lewis and the News.
No, let's play some Hard Rock.
How about another song? how about...
John's being funny, by the way.
Yeah. No, I like Huey Lewis.
I like his
being totally serious.
And Huey Lewis played harmonica on some Thin Lizzy songs.
Oh, I didn't know that.
At least one, yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I love John Sykes. I love... White Snake, but you know, I want to play a song by Blue Murder.
Oh, nice, John Sykes, Carmine Appice.
How about Valley of the Kings?
Mm-hmm. Carmine is being managed by our good friend Damon, by the way.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know if you know that, but cool. Yeah, let's do it.
Is that a song?
Yeah, yep.
Valley of the Kings by Blue Murder. Carmine gave me an impromptu drum lesson back before we knew him on the podcast or anything. In Boston, Massachusetts, they were playing a gig at the Paradise Rock Club in whenever that album came out, and a group called the Stage Dolls opened up. They were from Sweden, I believe, or somewhere in that area. Forgive me if I'm incorrect on that, but... I tapped out the Carmine put me on a spot and said tap out the beat with your foot and with your two hands, and I did it, and he said I had it right, and he wrote me out like some notes, musical notes, and he taught me how to play some Blue Murder music.
Cool.
So let's hear that song. John Sykes was amazing. I don't know if everybody knows this. Most of you should know this, that he wrote a lot of the songs, if not most of the songs, on that self-titled Whitesnake record that featured Adrian Vandenberg and Vivian Campbell, the video.
Yeah. Adrian played, I think, one solo on,
Here I Go Again.
Yeah, I think he played the solo for that. And then it was a weird thing because it was like Neil Murray on bass. I think Ansley Dunbar. I'm not Googling this, so don't crucify me.
Yeah.
Ansley Dunbar was on drums. John Sykes, who... David Coverdale had grabbed because he loved his work with Thin Lizzy on that last Thin Lizzy record. And, they did that self-titled thing. And then everyone was basically let go, and they were replaced with cool-looking metal dudes.
Right.
Yeah, and which worked, you know, and there was...
It did, but I thought John Sykes looked just as cool as all those
John
other guys.
John Sykes, I feel like he was a younger dude, and they should have kept him.
Right.
But they didn't, and I guess him and Coverdale had issues. But they brought in, of course, Ozzy's...
Rudy Sarzo.
Ozzy's team from the Diary of the Madman tour, not the album, was Tommy Aldridge and Rudy Sarzo.
Right.
And, of course, Vivian, who had been with Dio, joined up, Vivian Campbell, and now with Def Leppard. And then they brought in...
Adrian Vandenberg, right?
Yeah, Adrian Vandenberg from Vandenberg.
And then didn't Steve Vai end up in Whitesnake?
Yeah, that was the next record, right?
Right. Which was Slip of the Tongue. Yeah. Who left and who did Steve Vai replace?
Ooh, wow, that's a tough one. I believe he came in. At some point,
was either Vivian Campbell or Vandenberg.
Yeah, I think Adrian Vandenberg was hurt in an accident.
Oh, okay.
But he remained in the band, and I believe you're putting me on.
Well,
spot.
I'm sorry.
I believe it was Vivian Campbell who left.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So we're gonna have to.
So hey, Vivian Campbell is.
We don't know every fact, guys.
In
okay.
In those videos, but as far as I know, he never played a note on any Whitesnake.
Oh, right? Wow.
Yeah. Come on. As far as I know, but. Anyways, that's it. Let's do it. Valley of the Kings
by Blue Murder, featuring Tony Franklin on bass, I believe. Carmine Appice, of course, a good friend of Talking Metal, and John Sykes.
Yeah, check us out on Patreon and use our Amazon links. PayPal donations welcome. Here we go. Blue Murder on Talking Metal.
love.